My mother believed and my father believed that if I wanted to be president of the United States, I could be vice president. This is
America. Former Vice President Joe Biden has been elected president of the United States.
It is my greatest honor and privilege to have been your president. We will be back in some form.
We are still deeply divided.
Public health experts warned this was coming unless more was done. And here we are now.
Are you proud of what happened here today?
Absolutely.
Never before in American history has there been an uprising like this.
Of the 75 million Americans who voted for Donald Trump, I don't know how many today are feeling, dear God, what was I thinking? But I would wager a lot more are thinking, let's carry on this fight.
Character matters. It matters. Tell them the truth matters.
The 21st century is going to be the American century. Because we lead not only by the example of our power, but by the power of our example. That is the history of the journey of America.
The Supreme Court issued a unanimous decision that the big orange lad cannot be kicked off the ballot by the state of Colorado, and so ends the biggest waste of time since Nikki Haley decided to continue her campaign. Marion McKeown, states can't unilaterally decide to kick a presidential candidate off the ballot. That seems fair enough. What the hell was the point of all this, other than giving Donald Trump a shitload of free publicity?
Well, you know, I am going to disagree with you here, Charlotte, because this was not clear. Now, the legal scholars and legal experts and people who have an awful lot more expertise than me are still disagreeing about this ferociously, about the Supreme Court's judgment in particular, particularly the 5-4 aspect of it, which we'll get to. But in that, if you look at what the Constitution says, it says, you know, basically, if you're an insurrectionist, take a hike. Don't think you're going to take a, you know, get back into office. Don't think if you took the oath to uphold, you know, et cetera, and then you become an insurrectionist, don't think you can come back. And that was very much what, if you look at this from the perspective of the Supreme Court, this super majority of conservative judges, what they have always said is, okay, no frills, we're having no side dressing, we're having no extras. What the Constitution says is what the Constitution says, and we're not imputing or adding or implying anything that isn't there. So they basically have always said, what you've got to do is put yourself back in 1775, when America was, God bless it, run by white men who owned loads of property. And they were the only people who had a say in how the country was run. And that is how we're going to interpret the Constitution in 2024. And they said that and used that to justify overturning Roe v. Wade. They used it to justify overturning the New York law that said you can't bring Uzis on a subway, you know. So they used it for all kinds of things. They said, no, 70-75, they didn't say you can't bring your guns on a subway, sorry. You know, and they didn't say, et cetera. And now suddenly they have looked at this and they've thought, oh, no. It may not have said in Section 3 of the 14th Amendment that states cannot decide this, but we are deciding that states cannot decide this. So this is the one example where they will actually not just say, okay, if this is what the Constitution's framers wrote, this is what it means. So where they would take it literally, now they're working their way around and saying, oh, no, even though Section 5 of it does reference, you know, various things about constitutional measures, and makes it clear that this is a self-executing in that it doesn't need any legislation, but the court has said, nah, actually, this is a supermajority. We don't agree with that. So now we're going to say that it will take an act of Congress, that Congress would have to basically enact legislation to basically say you are an insurrectionist and you cannot run for federal office. Now, of course, we know the chances of that happening are zero. I can understand why, and I think probably on balance it might have been a good decision to have said, okay, we can't have a bunch of states going, you know, willy-nilly, okay, we're letting you on the ballot in California, we're not in Colorado, etc.
Yeah, it would lead to a well, where if you were taking him off, we're taking him off, wouldn't it?
Yes, but then again, with this caveat that this Section 3 only applies to insurrectionists. This doesn't apply to politicians you don't like. This doesn't apply to politicians who are guilty of fraud. This doesn't apply to politicians who may, you know, have taken drugs or had affairs or broken the law in other ways. It's very specific. It's only insurrectionists. Now, how many more insurrectionist presidential candidates are there going to be?
Who knows?
So the court could be
the thing you need to get the nomination.
But the Supreme Court could have said, actually, yes, you know what, Colorado, you're right. You looked at all this information and you decided on the basis of all the evidence before you that Donald Trump was an insurrectionist. And we can't really argue with that. So we're going to say you have that right. And therefore, all the other states who want to kick him off the ballot have that right too. They could have said that because that would be a literal finding of what the Constitution says in line with their decisions in the Dobbs case, which overturned Roe v. Wade, and in the Brown case, which overturned the New York gun control laws, and all the other cases as well to do with affirmative action. But as I say, so they change their minds when it suits them.
Yeah.
So now, basically, they have ring-fenced Donald Trump, and they have made it so that he could do January 6th all over again.
Yeah, well, Tina said this to me this morning. She said, what would he have to do? What would he have to say? Yeah. We both agreed, he'd probably have to go after God. He'd probably have to say, I'm God. And then people would be upset with him. But in terms of this, he didn't get exactly what he would have liked from the Supreme
Court. Quite a lot, mind you.
Yeah, but he didn't get exactly what he would have liked, did he, Marion? He would have loved the Supreme Court to say, and he didn't engage in insurrection. But they didn't say that. That was a notable absence.
They didn't go near that. But what they did, arguably, was give him a greater protection in that they were almost saying, we don't really care if you're an insurrectionist or not. You know, we're not even going to bother our artists going near that. All we're going to say is that Congress has to introduce a law for all future insurrectionists, knowing that for this legislation to make it onto the books, it would have to have a 60-40 majority in the Senate, and it will never, ever get that, you know, in our lifetimes. So they have basically ring-fenced, as I said, Donald Trump to say, have at it. Have at it, Donnie Boy. Do it again if you want. Don't worry. Congress will never get their shit together to do this act. We know that and you know that.
People might have thought that Super Tuesday was really boring this year. We are going to talk about it, but there's a lot to talk about, though, this week. Before we get to that foregone conclusion, snooze fest, a lot of talk this week in the lead-up to Super Tuesday about the mental fitness of Donald Trump and Joe Biden. We've covered it on the show before. Trump genuinely appearing confused, or was he confused? I'll play the clip for you, the few moments that he had in the last couple of weeks.
In Venezuela, did you just see Maduro? Venezuela, it's unbelievable. We're getting rid of the Romneys of the world. We want to get Romneys and those out. But they know that we are the only ones who can stop them. We're the only ones. This is the greatest movement in the history of our country, maybe in the history of any country. Even Argentina, they went MAGA. You know Argentina, great guy. He's a big Trump guy. He loves Trump. I love him because he loves Trump. When he called, I took his call. Anybody that loves me, I like them. I said, Abdul, he's still there. He's the head of the Taliban. He said, you're killing us all. Just don't do it anymore because terror will rain down on you. And he called you, yes, Your Highness. He called me Your Highness, which is interesting. We are a nation that just recently heard that Saudi Arabia and Russia will repeat.
Was that Trump being unable to read a teleprompter or his mental faculties failing him? What do you think, Mary?
I think that Trump tends to wander off the reservation and the teleprompter whenever he wants, you know what I mean, whenever it suits him. I think that what he had said on Tuesday night after the primaries and his, you know, this ramping up of the racist rhetoric and the invasion at the border and the poisoning of the blood of America, et cetera, I think, you know, I suspect, look, he's 77, in the same way as Biden's 81. As you get older, everyone tells me, you know, who is older, that you do lose a step, that you're not as quick, or that you know what you want to say, but the words, sometimes you forget someone's name, you forget, God, I do it already all the time, you know, you forget a word, you forget a name, you forget. So I think that, yes, they are both older men. And the irony is that, you have this election and you had the Super Tuesday, which was basically a rout for both of them. You know, broadly speaking, okay, Biden lost American Samoa, which had 96 votes cast, I think, to somebody nobody had ever heard of. And Nikki Haley won in Vermont and she won in D.C. So, you know, she picked up D.C. There are apparently, this is kind of fascinating to me, Donald Trump got 636 votes in the Washington, D.C. primary. And there are about 700,000 people living in Washington, D.C., registered voters, whatever. So that's not really a great showing. Now, Washington, D.C. is overwhelmingly Democrat. You know, in case anyone didn't know, that should give them an idea. Nikki Haley probably got about 1,300 or 1,400 votes. So, but she did, you know, beat him handily in D.C., and she also beat him in Vermont. She's going nowhere. As I say, Biden, the interesting thing for Biden on Super Tuesday was, we saw in a couple of more states, we saw in Minnesota. Now, in Michigan last week, he lost about 13%, 13 to 14% of the electorate went uncommitted, as in it was a protest vote about his handling of the war in Gaza. And as we spoke before about it on the podcast, Jarlath, Michigan has about 200,000 registered Arab American voters and a whole bunch of other Muslim voters in America. Just not to get too wonky, there are about 3 million, I think, Arab Americans, Americans of Arab descent. There are about 3.5 million, 4 million Muslims. So you've got, and those two groups overlap. But you've got Michigan, for example, about 60% of the Arab Americans are Christian and only about 30% are Muslim. So, you know, these are essentially two different groups to a large degree with quite a chunk overlapping. And they are really angry with Biden about what's happening in Gaza and about his failure to rein in Netanyahu. And you know, we've seen the tragedy that is unraveling there. And the same thing happened in Minnesota, where there's a big Somali population and a big Muslim population. And in there,
Somali the population?
Yeah. In
Minnesota?
In Minnesota, yeah. You know, it happens as in, like, you may remember, and well, you won't remember because you weren't around in 1850,
as far as I know. Vague recollection.
when Irish people started going to America at first, like, you know, they settled in certain places. You know, you had Boston, you had New York, whatever. And as happens, like, if family are there and more family or friends want to join them or want to emigrate, they will go to where there's a community already. Yeah. And there is a community in Minnesota. So anyway, 20% of the voters in Minnesota went with uncommitted. That is a big chunk. And in Massachusetts, which is Democrat country, 10% went uncommitted. And in North Carolina, about 12 or 13%. These are numbers. That's five or six states where Biden should be worried. He really should be worried. And I think I have spoken to a number of Democrats in the last week or two, including two pretty senior diplomats who are just pulling their hair out about Biden. And they are, and I have been again told by these two diplomats, but also by a number of other people and Senate staffers and various other people, have alluded to the fact that, you know, Biden is not on the same page as his foreign policy team at the moment. That Jake Sullivan, who's a super smart guy, who is his national security advisor, much younger, he's in his 40s, Tony Blinken, Secretary of State, and various other people as well on the National Security Council, do not support Biden letting Netanyahu basically run all over him, just run roughshod over him. And they think that Biden should have come out more forcefully a lot sooner. And Biden is the sticking point. They have all wanted to move much more towards taking a tougher line with Israel. But Biden, because he has had this sort of, you know, an undying, unconditional support for Israel for well over half a century, you know, which he says his father taught him. And he always says he took his children when they were 14 to Auschwitz, he took his grandchildren. And all of these things are really laudable. But he is dealing with Benjamin Netanyahu. He is dealing with a right-wing strongman. And for him not to be able to make that distinction when everyone else can is kind of bizarre. Wow. And especially when we know that Benjamin Netanyahu is Trump's guy. He's 100% Trump.
Yeah, he has
nothing but contempt. But contempt for Biden. So why Biden is taking all these risks, but it's not just the political risk. We know there are 30,000 plus people dead in Gaza. We know the suffering is horrific. And nothing Biden does even now is going to bring those people back. Nothing he does now is going to rebuild their homes or untraumatize those children. And for him to have let this run for 5 months, it really is kind
unforgivable.
Of
unforgivable. And I can see what they're saying about pulling their hair out and, you know, what do we do? But it just seems like this is the worst presidential race in history, that neither side wants either of these candidates. And yet we're going to be forced to endure it, and they're going to be forced to choose one of them. Was that evident on Super Tuesday? The state of the nation, state of the union, Marion, it has to be one of what the fuck is going on?
The state of it.
Yeah.
You know what? The interesting thing again is, as I say, Biden, in most of the 16 or 15 states in the territory, got up in the 90s, 90%. You know, Trump got, in most states, he had a big majority over Nikki Haley, but they both have vulnerabilities, and we can see that. So it's ironic that both of these candidates, who nobody wants, are both doing really, really well in the primaries, if you allow the caveat that the turnout is very, very low. The turnout for Super Tuesday was really low, and that's a sign of, I think, disgruntlement.
How low are we talking?
We're talking significantly lower than previous years. Now, all of the votes haven't been counted yet, but we're talking about certainly in the mail-in votes. I think in California, only about 8% had mailed in their votes, and usually California has a really high percentage, up to 40% of mail-in votes sometimes. So, you know,
who does that suit better? Mail-in,
Democrats always do better with mail-in. Because that was part of the whole January 6th thing, because Trump kept saying mail-in votes are fraudulent inherently. If you mail in your vote, you're a crook, basically.
Yeah. If we were to extrapolate further from that, like if this is the level of motivation in terms of Trump not motivating people to get out and Biden not doing it either, does that carry forward to November? Or predict things? Can you weather forecast this, Mary?
The person who's going to win this is going to be the person who gets out the vote. It's going to be the person who can motivate their side better. Now, at the moment, we know that Trump's MAGA supporters, as he loves to say, would crawl over broken glass to get to a polling booth to cast their vote for him. But are there enough of them? Are there enough? Because we've seen with Nikki Haley that somewhere between roughly about a third of Republicans, if you average it all out, close to a third, certainly around 30% of Republicans do not want Donald Trump. Now, I suspect if Joe Biden had an opponent, a Gretchen Whitmer or somebody running against him, he'd be getting an even higher number of people who do not, that would become visible. But because Biden's the only game in town, essentially, they've kind of got to give him 90%. But with Trump, we're seeing the gap there. And we're seeing that. And again, when I was at the Nikki Haley campaign events and all of that, about half of the people that I spoke to at her event said, no way, Trump, no way, absolutely not. I don't care. You know, even if Nikki Haley doesn't make it, I'll stay home. Some of them said they'd vote Biden. And then the other half said, yeah, you know, I'm a Republican. I'll hold my nose and vote for Trump, even though I'd rather Haley. But even if he loses 15% of that Republican vote, that's a chunk. You know, I don't think Biden will lose 15% across the board. He may lose it in a couple of really important states, which could cost him the election, like Michigan, like Wisconsin, like Pennsylvania, where there are also a lot of Arab Americans and Muslims. Even Georgia, there, you know, he won Georgia by about 60,000 votes in 2020. And the Arab American vote in Georgia, which is quite small, but it all turned out, and well over 80% voted for Biden. So that kind of made the difference there, if you will. Like if they stay home in November, I don't think he'll win Georgia anyway this time round. But, you know, it's so you can really see where this is problematic. I think that Biden, you know, I was, Mike Tyler did a call with reporters. He's his communications director for the campaign. And he was really gung-ho. And he said, look, we've got $150 million in the tank. Donald Trump has already spent all their money on his legal fees. He's got no money. Donald Trump will always get money from rich donors. He's not going to run out of cash before the election. But the Democrats tend to have good ground games. They tend to be well organized. But I don't know. I see it. I remember the first election I covered was Bush-Gore. And you could see, you could sense that Gore should have won it. You know, the Clinton economy was phenomenal. The dot-com boom was soaring. It was before 9/11. America was the undisputed superpower of the world. And yet, George W. Bush, this clown prince, basically, and know-nothing who was proud of it, beat Al Gore. We saw with Hillary Clinton, she was Secretary of State for Obama, you know, two-term president, did a whole lot of great stuff, didn't do as much as he should have done, in my view. He was too timid on a lot of things. But, you know, she should have beaten Trump, this ignoramus know-nothing who came in with all this, you know, nonsense and white nationalist American first claptrap. And yet she was beaten. And there's a sense, even with Biden, even though he has, the economy is doing much better, he has done a lot of really good things, can he convert that into convincing people that they want another term for him? Or will they just go with Trump? Because on some level, they think it might be more entertaining. Because honestly, a lot of it will come down to that. And we'll see. We'll see what happens.
And that is where the State of the Union address comes in, isn't it? Yes. This is his opportunity, a free swing. If Super Tuesday was less Grand National and more Donkey Derby, the State of the Union is the opposite. This is one of the most expected, anticipated and built up speeches of the year, Marion. This address last time around really restored faith in the man, his vitality, yeah, his wit, his ability to take people out from the crowd. Yeah. It was juiced up that day. Yeah. What are you expecting this time around? And what's the chat over there?
I was laughing. I was reading in the Rolling Stone about how apparently I'm digressing here slightly, but apparently the whole Trump White House was off their face on drugs, basically, for the 4 years. They were on Xanax, they were on Ambien, they were on apparently ketamine, fentanyl, you name it. But one of the drugs that a lot of them was taking was a drug called, I think it's called Provigil, and it's a drug that smartens up your brain, sharpens it up, makes you like stay awake, alert, smart, witty, you know, great recall. It basically kind of gives you an artificial boost to your IQ.
It's like the limitless drug in that movie.
Kind of, yeah. And I said, I'd love to get my hands on it. But anyway, I was having a good old chuckle because crazy Ronny Jackson, who was Trump's doctor, you may remember, he said Trump could live to be 200 if he gave up Kentucky Fried Chicken. That was his medical opinion. But anyway, he was writing out for whatever they wanted, whatever the White House staffers wanted. So I don't know, maybe Biden might need to get some little bit of sparkling stuff that will jizz him up a bit, because you're right, last year that when he kind of, I think everyone was surprised, I think it was about Social Security and something else, where he said the Republicans wanted to end it and they started booing. He said, oh, you don't want to end it, so you're with me, you want to keep it. And he totally flipped the tables on them in a way that was so nimble. It was just really nimble. And then he kind of laughed and it was like, yeah, I look it up. There, yeah. And so I don't know if this year, it's really important. The stakes couldn't be higher for him. But I think there's also a change in the State of the Union. I remember the first time there was a congressional Republican who, Barack Obama was, I don't know if it was State of the Union or if it was a speech, and I think it was State of the Union, and he said, "You lie." And everyone was shocked and appalled because of the show of disrespect for a president. Now, we saw Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert in the Biden State of the Unions, the ones that he's done already, where they jeered him, they catcalled him, they stood up and they waved, you know, silly stuff. Yep. It has become a free-for-all. I think that what some of these Republicans will again try to do, will be to put him off his game, will be to heckle, to jeer, to interrupt. And let's see if he can deal with it. But I think that that is probably part of the game plan, that they're going to try and rattle him in some way. But he's really got to deliver on this. He's got to deliver. You know, and they're saying that he's going to say, OK, what do you want? You can choose between, you know, a president who's going to cuddle up to Putin, a president who's going to get rid of democracy, a president who's going to, you know, basically gut healthcare, or you can have, you know, a democracy with a good economy, blah, 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 you know, and decent healthcare, cheaper drugs, protect women's rights, etc. And when you put it like that, it sounds like a no-brainer. Like, why would you take this, you know, really horribly divisive, racist, you know, guy who is just basically a crook, as we have seen. He's a crook who's been found guilty of sexual assault. He's a crook who's been found guilty of fraud. 91 indictments against him. If they ever get to court, we'll see. Well, we know 34 of them will in New York in a couple of weeks. But, and, you know, and yet we will see what happens. You know, it may be that America decides, yes, we would rather have a crook. And,
I mean,
you know,
I talk about this a bit in my show. Sorry for the shameless plug here, but you know, it is insane that this is your opponent. 93 indictments, all the information we have on this man, and you're still struggling to beat him. That's an indictment in itself. And the biggest stick to beat Joe Biden with is his capacity, his vitality, his mental. Strength, his, you know, as you said on the air with Matt Cooper, how much of Biden's bumbling is down to his speech impediment? And sometimes I feel really bad for the guy, because it's an incredible thing that he's done to overcome that speech impediment.
Really,
that never gets brought up here. The man is still coping with it. Anyone who has a friend or a family member, as I do, that overcame that knows this is not over. It is still going, and you're working with it. That's not to say that there isn't a diminishment, a dulling of his mental capacity, but why doesn't that come up? Like, why is it not taboo to have a go at him for struggling to find words?
You know, I actually think that this is something that Biden... And, you know, it's a tricky one, because you don't want to say, oh, poor me, I've got a speech impediment and you're all mocking me. Yeah. But in fact, he should, I think, be able to say, look, because every time he speaks, he has to overcome the speech impediment. And how he does this by speaking in a very slow, very deliberate manner. And as I've said to you before, Jarlett, 20 years ago, I remember being at events in Washington, D.C., and Biden, who was always very friendly and a bit of a windbag and would go on and on and on, he was rambling back then. He was rambling 20 years ago, rambling 25 years ago, you know, getting words mixed up and saying the same thing two or three times about his sainted mother in the same conversation. You know, I think that's just who Joe Biden is. And I think that it would be better for him to own it and say, you know what, I do ramble a bit. I do get mixed up a bit. I've always been a bit like this. But you know what? I get shit done.
Yeah, and that he does.
Yeah. And that's really what he might need to say, is just to own it and go, yeah, I am 81. You know what? Stop, you know, like, stop pretending.
You know, we were talking about this during the week as well, Marion. And, you know, the age thing, that America's obsession with electing elderly white men, like, it is a head scratcher in so many ways when you consider, you know, what life is for the average American and how exhausted we all are all the time. Like, I'm obviously busier than most, but we're all knackered. How would these guys get the energy to do this? And then also you think about the 70-year-old people in your life, and yet, you know, these are the dudes we want. The oldest.
Yep.
Okay. Most experienced.
I'm going to disagree with you there, because I have, in fact, one very, very close friend, and I think he is about 70 now. He is the smartest, quickest, most energetic person, literally, I know. Yeah, and I think that that is true of, you know, even in Congress. Now, Nancy Pelosi is 83. You know, I defy anyone to get one over on Nancy Pelosi at 83, because she, and, you know, when she was taking on Trump every day, she was 81, 82. You know, when she was really cleaning his clock for him,
yeah.
she was in her 80s. And so I don't think it's necessarily true that because Biden, although he looks physically much more frail, I think that because he speaks very slowly and he stumbles and he gets words mixed up, that means he, you know, it's a sign of an acute decline. I think it's more of who he always was. As I say, if you look at Bernie Sanders, Bernie's well into his 80s. You know, he gets his words mixed up as well. He pauses and he stops and my God, he can make his point very, very forcefully, and you're never left in any doubt what Bernie Sanders means. Yeah. You know, so I don't know if there isn't too much of a fuss being made about the 80s. You know, back in the 80s, which, you know, was in his 70s. He was 77, I think, when he left the White House. And but you know what? He managed to joke his way out of it. He managed to basically, and then seem like this amiable, shucks, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm a good guy. And as I say, I think people are not happy with Biden in ways that they can't put their finger on, and they're putting it down to his age. Mm. I think
perhaps there is such a thing as political fitness, and we don't understand it. And we don't know if you're in the business as long as they are, and they've done so many air miles, they've literally done so many laps, they've run dozens of marathons, that they know how to sustain. And but that said, Marion, he's got to stand on his hind legs at this State of the Union address and explain how he propped up and facilitated a genocide in Palestine. And now turns around and goes, this is awful. Jesus, this is terrible. What's happening over there? This is on you, Joe. I mean, this is on you and your administration. I'm sorry.
Okay, so now let's look at that first. But, you know, what you just said there, I'm going to get back to that very quickly about political fitness, because I think that's a really, really good point. Nancy Pelosi was politically fit. She was at peak fitness, arguably, when she was 80. Bernie Sanders, when he was running his campaign, my God, I was run ragged running around after him back in 2020 when he had 10,000 people at every event and people couldn't get in, and it was all kids under the age of 20 who were there, and 25. Yeah. But I think the problem with Biden is he's been around too long. People are sick of him. They feel like he's been around since the mountains, you know, that he's always been in politics. Mm. He's always been there. Whereas Trump, even though we've all seen way too much of Trump in the last 8 years, he's still a bit of a novelty. And American voters like novelty. That's, I think, partly why they picked Bush over Gore. That's partly why they picked Trump over Hillary Clinton. They don't necessarily go to the most qualified candidate. If they did, it would be a no-brainer in all of those races. They go with the novelty. So I think that's certainly not novel.
Yeah.
But back to the State of the Union, and back to, America is divided on Gaza and on Biden's response. Now, he's underwater in terms of overall approval, but older Americans overwhelmingly support giving Israel whatever Israel wants to destroy Hamas. Absolutely, unconditionally supports that. And that has come up time and time and time again in polling over the last 5 months. Younger Americans do not. And there's now a move where about between 30 and 40%, depending on the polls you look at, of Americans think that Israel's response has been over the top, to use one of Biden's expressions. That's only 30 to 40% of Americans, which you have to then presume that the other 60 to even 70% think what's happening is okay. So Biden is not going to get hammered in the State of the Union. Now, one of the interesting things you may have noticed is Trump has said nothing about this. Nothing. Other than saying, if I was president, this would never have happened. You know, it would never have happened. But he has been really silent. And I think that's because his campaign advisors, who are really pretty savvy and pretty experienced, are saying to him, you keep your mouth shut. Do not walk yourself into a trap here. So I think that it's interesting that he hasn't slammed Biden on his response. But then he can't really, because Biden's response is supporting Benjamin Netanyahu,
yeah, and who his buddy.
Trump's great buddy. So in a way, Biden's response is what you would expect from Donald Trump, largely. You know, that if he were in office, he'd be going, have at it, Bibi, have at it, like he is with Putin and like he is, you know, with everybody else.
Well, Marion, I have to stop you there. We need to take a break. We've got lots more to talk about, as you can tell, including what's happening with lawmakers in Alabama as they advance legislation to protect IVF providers. We'll also talk about Irish Oscar hopes. I know Marion's got her bookies form book out to see who really is going to take home these prizes. There's an awful lot more just in the news in America, even though you'd be forgiven for leaving there isn't with Super Tuesday this week. Every single week we get into the weeds over on patreon.com/Irishmanabroad. And for one final piece of news, I've just announced my first US tour date. I'll be coming to Boston on November 3rd. Plenty of time for you to get your tickets. It's on sale now. The link is in the bio. I hope to see all of you there. But in the meantime, come on over to patreon.com/Irishmanabroad to hear the rest of our show.
Ready? You have the cameras rolling? This is
America. A lot of people who would probably consider themselves liberal have done very well financially under the Donald Trump 4 years.
You encouraged espionage against our people.
You condemn any interference by Russia in the American election.
By Russia or anybody else.
Russia, please, if you can, get us Hillary Clinton's emails. Please, Russia, please.
To renew America, we must revitalize our democracy.